Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And if you are looking to find the Patriot Journalist Network, the Twitter team, just go to www.patriotjournalist.com. And, of course, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website as well at bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And check out the Give page where you can find some wonderful charities, especially this Christmas season, that you can help up, help out. And there will also be some updates coming soon within the next couple weeks there on the website. And you can also, if you are a Facebook user, check us out on Facebook by going to the search engine and just putting in Bard's Logic Political Talk, and that will get you to the Facebook page. Like the page, and we also have a little group there on Facebook as well under the same name. So check it out and ask to join the group, and we'd appreciate it. And so I'd like to say happy Thanksgiving Eve for those who are listening to the show live tonight, or if you are listening to this Thursday, for some of you, be listening to this on Thanksgiving night. Happy Thanksgiving. And good luck on Black Friday for those of you who are going to partake in those events. And if you are listening to this archive the day after or days after Thanksgiving, I hope you had a very happy Thanksgiving. And tonight we are going to talk about Iran's nuclear deal. And is it more failed Obama foreign policy? So callers in chat participation, couldn't get that out, or of course, as it is every night here on Bard's Logic, welcome, and come talk to me, the host, and we have the panelists Cindy Todd and James Neighbor call in, and also other audience members. And for those of you new to Bard's Logic, we know that all mics stay open, so you are welcome to join us on our roundtable discussion. And so if anyone would like to chime in later on, you can give us a call at area code 347-945-7428. And as I said, Bard's Logic will be discussing the Obama deal to Iran on their nuclear program. And it appears that Obama is trusting a nation whose regional leaders won't. And I've got an article here that I'm going to read about Israel's take on it. And the administration is willing to give the Iranian government 6 months, and I've heard even some reports that even a possibility of 12 months, to discover if diplomacy, and I'm not knocking diplomacy. Diplomacy is wonderful. It's actually got a master's degree in diplomacy. But we will see in that interim deal whether diplomacy will work in ending the Iranian aspirations of attaining a nuclear weapons. And we'll ask tonight and discuss as part of our talk tonight, is relaxing sanctions wise, or does it begin the unraveling, which will lead to an Iran that will attain and can unleash nuclear weapons on our allies? And, of course, the first one of our allies, that Iran, would unleash these nuclear weapons if they were to get them, would be, of course, would be Israel. So I got an article here from the Times of Israel, dated yesterday. It says, most Israelis believe the interim Iran deal endangers them. And it starts off, the poll also shows large majorities consider Netanyahu's criticism of Obama administration over Geneva Accord to be justified. And the article starts with, a large majority of Israelis believe the interim accord signed with world powers with Iran on Sunday endangers Israel. And a similar majority of Israelis consider Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's withering public criticism of the Obama administration over its handling of the issue to be justified, in the opinion poll found Tuesday. Netanyahu and U.S. President Barack Obama have been publicly sniping over the terms of the accord this week, with Netanyahu on Sunday branding it a historic mistake. And I'd say Newt Gingrich is kind of online with that. We'll hear some quotes from him later on this evening. And, I mean, Newt's willing to look it out, but it's obvious that he's on the side of trust, or maybe even mistrust, and verify. But back to the article, it says, they're bringing it a historic mistake and warning that the most dangerous regime in the world took a meaningful step toward acquiring the most dangerous weapons in the world. Obama on Monday hit back by deriding opponents' tough talk and bluster and asserting that the deal is good for the United States, it's good for our allies, good for Israel. The six-month pact signed early Sunday rules back some sanctions, I believe it's about $8 billion, on Iran in return for limits on nuclear enrichment. The shuttering of certain sites, and an agreement by Tehran to allow some international oversight. Tuesday's survey reported on Israel's Channel 2 News found 60% of Israelis consider the interim deal endangers Israel as compared to 25% who do not and 15% who had no opinion. The same survey found 58% of Israelis believe Netanyahu's criticism of the Obama administration over the accords justified, while 28% consider the criticism exaggerated, and 14 have no opinion. So, Netanyahu, the survey was conducted among 401 Israelis, no margin of error was provided. And that's not a ton of people, so I'm always kind of skeptical of polls, but we'll just go with what this article has here. It says Netanyahu, I mean, I can't see where this deal would be good for Israel myself, but Netanyahu said Sunday that Israel did not consider itself bound by the terms of the accord, which he called a bad deal. It reduces pressure on Iran without receiving anything tangible in return. Asked how the U.S. might respond to any Israeli decisions to strike Iran's nuclear facilities, Obama's Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes said Tuesday night that the U.S. had always recognized Israel's right to take its own decisions in regard to security, but believed in the imperative to seek a diplomatic resolution to the crisis over Iran's nuclear program if possible. He stresses that all options remain on the table should diplomatic avenue fail. The interim accord allows Iran to continue to enrich uranium to 3.5%, but bars enrichment to 20%. Asked whether the permanent accord to be negotiated by the world powers with Iran over the next 6 months might similarly allow Tehran to enrich uranium, a right that Iran is insisting upon. And that's one of the arguments against this accord, is, and I'm going off the article. That's one of the arguments against the accord, is that some over in Iran are touting that this indeed gives them the, you know, by default, I guess, gives them the right to enrich uranium that we've conceded. They didn't use the term conceded, but I believe in their mind that they're thinking that we conceded that it is the right to enrich uranium. And so there's definitely some separation on that. But that's what they're touting over there. So Rouhani, I believe, is the one who is who's already said that. So get back to the article. It says, Rhodes said it might provide, provided that Iran met all the international community's concerns over its program, there could be a limited enrichment capacity, he said. Netanyahu has demanded that Iran be stripped of its entire capacity to enrich uranium and all other aspects of what he terms its military nuclear infrastructure. The Prime Minister on Monday announced that he was dispatching his National Security Advisor to Washington to discuss the particulars of the permanent agreement with Iran. That permanent deal, he said, must ensure the dismantling of Iran's military nuclear capability. Now, what I've seen of the arguments back and forth on whether that does that is I would have to say no. Now, the supporters of the deal are, you know, touting that this is the first step, you know, towards the dismantling of the nuclear weapons program, but not, you know, not going as far as to saying that it will. They're saying that, you know, we have to try diplomacy first. But even when asked, and we'll talk more about this later, asked if a military strike would be something that would be considered, and of course, they move away from that possibility of them doing that. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess, over the 6 months is basically what they're saying. So anyway, for those who are out there listening to the archives and can't call in, just, you know, take the time to think on that and see what you think. And one of the things that you can do is to send your comments about what you hear on the show tonight by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And there is a contact page where you can put your name and your comments, and then that will send it to me, the host. And for everyone who sends me a message, I will reply as soon as I can, but definitely, you know, I will respond to any of the comments you have and what your thoughts are, and then we will put them on the air the next time we talk about this topic. Now, as I said earlier, we had talked about the lifting of the embargo, or not the embargo, the lifting of the sanctions. Of course, and part of that is about an oil embargo from the on Iran. And there is one oil provider that's stating skepticism, crude traders that are skeptic about whether the Iran, you know, the lifting of the sanctions, and of course part of those would be, you know, concerns oil, will actually increase, you know, of course some people, you know, some folks, I'll go back to that, some folks will be, you know, be happy about that because they'll think that, oh, well, you know, we'll, you know, have more oil coming out, and, you know, as many know, that Iran at least was the second largest producer in the Middle East of oil. And so perhaps there was some thinking that, well, if this economic sanctions are lifted, that perhaps more oil supplies, oil supplies would be increased. But there are some that have their doubts. And one of those that has their doubts is called Brent crude oil. And they're skeptical if the Accords are loosening some economic sanctions against Iran, and of course, for return to limiting nuclear work, that there will be a surge in the oil supply. They believe not. And I've got an article here that I'll bring up. And this is from the Bloomberg report. And so the benchmark for half the world's crude oil rose 43 cents to settle today. And this was information was today, November 27th, at $111.31 a barrel in New York. Little change from where it was before the agreement. That was reached on November 24th, while oil fell as much as 2.7% the next day. Futures erased the decline by the trading session. So it doesn't look like that the agreement's going to help out bringing any more oil into production so that we can try to see the lowering of costs here. So I don't see where there's going to be any help with that. And I want to say, while I'm clicking back over to the chat, I want to thank everyone you're coming to the chat tonight to this live show. I do know that it is the eve before Thanksgiving. So, of course, people who do show up to listen live, it's greatly appreciated. And, of course, for those who have not, though, we appreciate your listenership as well. And, of course, for those listening live, you can share the link with your friends and so that they can listen to the link later. And for those of you who are in the chat but not logged in, you can also call in if you'd like to chime in about tonight. And that is 347-945-7428 if you'd like to call in and tell us what you think. Or you can send a message via the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, and you can go to the contact page, and there you can send me a message, and I will reply, if not tonight, then sometime in the near future. And I'll check my emails here from time to time, because that's where it's sent to, so that I can read your message. And, of course, check us out, as I said earlier tonight, but for those of you who just come to the show, check us out on Facebook. Just go to the search engine. Just type in Bard's Logic Political Talk.com, not .com, Bard's Logic Political Talk, and check us out on Facebook as well as the Bard's Logic Political Talk group that we started as well. So I'm going to go, and I found an article from, as I said, Bloomberg, the rest of the article that I've got that information from. It says, markets appear skeptical about the chances of a final agreement with Iran leading to a lifting of the oil embargo until there's a more clarity around what the deal will contain, precisely, said Julius Walker, global energy market strategist at UBS Securities in New York. The agreement limits Iran's atomic activities in exchange for as much as $7 billion in relief over 6 months. Okay, so I guess earlier $8 billion statement was just a billion off. But I guess when we're talking about governments, that's at least when it comes to ours, that's not much. But it does allow Iran to export oil at current levels rather than forcing additional reductions by buyers, as they would have been required under current law, according to the White House statement. The accord relaxes restrictions on cars, petrochemicals, aviation parts, gold, and insurance for oil cargoes. The reaction of the markets makes a lot of sense, says Michael Whitner, head of oil market research at Societe Generale in New York. The bottom line is that this interim deal changes almost nothing. There will be no new oil coming out of Iran. So as I said, folks, unfortunately, I don't see where, at least where it comes to oil supplies and possibly even lowering any gas prices here in the United States and, frankly, anywhere else, it looks like that that's not going to be any kind of a benefit for us. So it says the crude sanctions have deprived Iran of more than $80 billion in reserves, U.S. President Barack Obama administration said in the November statement after the agreement was reached between Iran and the so-called P5+1 nations, and that includes the U.S., U.K., China, Russia, France, and Germany. Iran was the sixth largest producer in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries last month with 2.6 million barrels a day, down from 3.5 million in January 2012, according to a Bloomberg survey. This is a six-month agreement, and it's really too early to tell any possible outcome. Executive Director of the International Energy Agency told reporters in Moscow on November 25th, we do not know if that the agreement does not directly affect oil sanctions in a big way. Under the U.S. embargo that started February 6th, Iran's six remaining buyers, and this is important to see who these are, is China, India, Japan, South Korea, Turkey, and Taiwan. And speaking of Taiwan, I don't know if how many folks know this is a recent development, is just, I believe, sometime today, the China's first aircraft carrier, that, of course, they've got from the Russians, has just passed through the Taiwan Strait. Now, for those of you familiar with, you know, the intricacies of the Taiwan and China relationship, that does not, at least in my opinion, bode well for Taiwan, for China to be showing that kind of military power in the Taiwan Strait. That's a very strategic area there for the country of Taiwan. And so that's definitely something that I'd like to keep an eye on for folks. And let's see, Harriet is chiming to the chat. Welcome, Harriet. Thank you very much for coming to the show on this Thanksgiving Eve. And I've seen other people who were in the chat tonight taking some time to spend with us. I know, which is busy for a lot of folks, to talk about this very important issue tonight. And we may just have an abbreviated Bard's Logic Political Talk evening tonight. For that reason, also, on personal note, it is my birthday today. So, you know, maybe I'll spend a little bit more time with the family, but we'll see how things develop. And if we get, see what develops throughout the show. We still have plenty of time, but I may close out the show earlier tonight just for the holiday. And as I said, of course, today is my birthday as well, but we'll see how develop. So welcome, Harriet, for signing into the chat. And if you'd like to chime in, Harriet, you can at 347-945-7428. But, oh, there you go. It says, Harriet, oh, thank you, Robert. Tom Turkey will wait for tomorrow to cook. Yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there who are cooking turkey tonight, and so they'll be listening to the archive later on. So, and we're still hoping to hear from our two panelists. You said that they'll be coming in for a little bit, taking some time out from their Thanksgiving preparations. Oh, many more happy, healthy birthdays. Thank you very much, Harriet. I really appreciate that. So we'll check this thing out on Let's see. Oh, I've got more birthday wishes that I need to on Facebook that I need to. I know we're going off subject, folks, and I hate to do that. I'm sorry about that, but you know this is one of those organic things on Blog Talk Radio. But I do see that I've got more birthday wishes here on Facebook that I'll have to attend to. And thank you everyone out there who is sending me the warm wishes today. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful to hear from a lot of the audience members and also friends on Facebook sending me messages for today. I really appreciate it. I really do. So I want to put that out there. Okay, Harriet, I see you. Okay, but I'm going to get back to my Bloomberg article here. It says the market isn't moving a lot because the limited amount of oil expected to hit the market on the skepticism. There's a lot of skepticism surrounding this deal, especially since, you know, Irene, as we say in the description, is, you know, the Obama administration is trusting a regime that many of the regional countries around Iran don't trust. You know, so we'll see. And the term that's going around now is untrust but verify. And I mean, there is talk about. I know I'm going off the article again, but there is talk also about the inspectors coming in to inspect certain sites, but of course we'll have to wait to see how cooperative that they'll be. And this kind of is reminiscent for when they want to send inspectors into Iraq to check for weapons of mass destruction. And there's a lot of hem-hauling around, and I believe that because of all the hem-hauling around about sending inspectors into Iraq, I think a lot of the weapons of mass destruction that were there, I think, were sent to Syria. And I think there's very weapons that whoever released them that were set off in Syria are those very weapons that were in Iraq. So I think the chemical weapons that we've seen unleashed in Syria by, as I said, whoever, were those that used to belong to Saddam Hussein in Iraq. But that's my thoughts on it. If anyone wants to make any comment or chime about it, they're, of course, more than willing to either send me a message through Facebook or call in and give me their thoughts. But anywho, we'll go back to which says crude imports from Iran totaled 715,000 barrels a day in October, down from 1.26 million the prior month, according to IEA. Exports averaged 1.1 million in the first 9 months of this year. The volume of Iranian crude oil available to the international market will remain largely unchanged over the next 6 months, predicted, this is from the Goldman Sachs Group, predicted in a report published on November the 25th. Morgan Stanley said in a note that any substantial weakness in prices following the announcement of the deal would be an overreaction. That's unfortunate. And I'll just finish the article up here where it says, as part of the agreement, the European Union will lift a ban on insurance for tankers transporting Iranian oil, making it easier for Persian Gulf nations' six remaining international customers to take delivery. The relaxing of the insurance restrictions, this is something I guess a lot of folks don't take into consideration when they're thinking about these sanctions. The relaxing of the insurance restrictions might ease shipping and increase Iran exports by 200,000 to 400,000 barrels a day. Kevin Book, Managing Director of Clearview Energy Partners, LLC, a Washington-based consulting group, said. Even if Iran and world powers reach a comprehensive accord, which frankly, folks, I'm not very optimistic of seeing that happen, and the oil embargo is eased, the country would struggle to raise exports by more than 300,000 to 400,000 barrels a day in 1 month, Walker said. Iran's production capacity has shrunk due to a lack of investment and technology, though it could also sell more crude out of accumulated stocks. Now, one of the things that Iran is also looking into, and this is not well known, and China's looking into this, Russia's looking into this, and other nations, some that are actually our allies, you know, such as the UK and Canada, I believe even Australia is looking into this. And this, people are like, well, what's this? Well, I'm about to tell you, because it's something that Newt Gingrich was actually made fun of for when he was running in his campaign in 2012, was they're looking at actually going to the moon and colonizing the moon so that they can mine what is called helium-3, which is actually a fuel source, you know, and among other things, in which to make nuclear fusion reactions. Right now we do nuclear fission. I'm not going to get too technical too long, but that's how our nuclear reactors work now, is through nuclear fission, in which you actually, you know, have the atoms split, and that causes the energy, but of course that also creates a lot of the radiation. But with nuclear fusion, you get, and that's actually the kind of energy that is created through the sun. That's what happens on the sun, where the energy comes from, is nuclear fusion. And so they're actually looking at that fuel source. But you won't hear much about that. But I do ask folks to research helium-3 and how that as an energy source is definitely something that we in the United States here really need to look into, because, nuclear fusion is much cleaner energy. It doesn't have any, it doesn't have the kind of radiation that that you find with nuclear fission. So it definitely bears out for people to check out. So, and speaking of the of that, Rutgers, you know, because one of the things that, you know, do here through research for the show is, you know, go through articles and see what's going on, as well as look at other news. But it says here, you know, a report from Reuters, is it says Iran is continuing to building at Iraq, R-A-A-K, so maybe I didn't pronounce it right, a nuclear site despite the deal. It says that Iran's going to continue to pursue construction of a heavy water reactor, and and that Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif was quoted as saying on Wednesday that even despite the deal to shelve a project, you know, because we're, you know, that's the whole reason for the deal was to, you know, limit their capability of creating, you know, for a nuclear weapon, in which actually one of the things that was on Crossfire the other day, folks could check out, is that there seems to also be a deal between Iran and the North Koreans to build intercontinental ballistic missiles. Now, the thing with intercontinental ballistic missiles, they're pretty much for the delivering of nuclear weapons. I mean, it doesn't make sense economically to use those for conventional weapons, use intercontinental ballistic missiles for conventional weaponry, but for nuclear nuclear missile, intercontinental ballistic missiles are, you know, pretty much made for that. And it looks like that Iran is working with North Korea in building that. So it looks like the Axis of Evil is still going strong. At least it appears there. But it says, here on the article, guys, that the uncompleted research reactor emerges one of several big stumbling blocks in the Marathon negotiations. Now, folks, Marathon negotiations. Yeah, I just, I just feel like this deal, I feel like the deal is rushed. I feel like that, you know, I think they just want to have some kind of deal put on the table. I just think it wasn't very well thought through. It says, in which Iran agreed to restrain its atomic activities for 6 months in return for limited sanction relief. The agreement is intended to buy time for talks on a final settlement and dispute. Well, if we're going to talk to Iran the same way that we talked with Russia when it came to arms treaties and arms talk, as many of the listeners out there know, if not all of you know, that pretty much, at least in our opinion, you know, with the conservative point of view, is that we were in the losing end. The United States was in the losing end of those types of talks, you know, when it comes to Russia. So if it's going to turn out where the talks with Iran are going to be the pretty much the same result as there was with Russia, then that's definitely not going to be a final settlement of the dispute. I just don't see that. So it says, Western powers fear Iraq could be a source of plutonium, one of the two materials, along with highly enriched uranium, that could be used for the core of a nuclear weapon once it is operational. Iran says it would produce medical isotopes only. I mean, seriously, folks, Iran, you know, who is, you know, Rouhani is recently, you know, saying that death of America must be acted upon. I mean, are these folks that could be trusted? I don't think so. So this, for them to come and say that they're only going to produce medical isotopes only, I mean, how can anyone really believe that? How can anyone really believe that? You know, I mean, did they all of a sudden, you know, just become, you know, trustworthy? It aggravates me, I guess. But anyway, according to the agreement text, Iran said it would not make any further advances of its activities on the Iraq reactor under construction near the western Iranian town with that name. Capacity at the Iraq site is not going to increase. It means no new nuclear fuel will be produced and no new installations will be installed, but construction will continue there. Well, if they're not going to finish the plan, why are they going to spend the money to continue the construction? See what I mean? They're already starting to talk out of both ends of their mouth, and but it seems like the president is swallowing it. When asked about this, French foreign minister spokesman Romain Nadal said, in the interim accord, the Iraq reactor is specifically targeted and the end of all work at this reactor. In the agreement and the text, which has been approved by the Iranian authorities, the Iraq reactor is clearly targeted. Well, it doesn't matter whether it's targeted if they're still going to be doing construction on it, so that when things fall through, and I think they will, then they could just go ahead and just put into place, you know, what they need for the reactor when they have, you know, all the other construction that you would surround, like the core, for instance. They're in place. And I believe it even talks more about that in the article later. It says, Israel widely believed to be the only nuclear-armed state in the Middle East has denounced the nuclear agreement with Iran as a historical mistake, and it does not actually dismantle the program. Now, we knew that. The ink is not even dried on the agreement, and already we are hearing provocative announcements from Iran, like whose coyness and ambiguity could well augur a breach of the deal. Israel Strategic Affairs Minister Yuval Steinitz told Reuters when asked about the statement. So Israel, who's right there, knows that it's BS, it's crap, And they believe, and right now I concur, is that what the Iranians are doing are pretty much just buying time. And if they are just buying time, there's a question that I want people to consider. And one thing that Newt Gingrich asked during, a Crossfire episode is what we should consider if they don't
right.
keep their word.
And halt their plutonium nuclear program. So it makes the Iranian regime less dangerous.
So here's my question. What you just said makes perfect sense as a way of thinking about it. Shouldn't the Congress, in fact, pass very, very tough sanctions conditioned on the Iranians breaking their word? That is, as long as they do what you just said, as long as we have access on demand, which is not, by the way, included in the agreement, as long as we're able to actually inspect, no new sanctions. But the minute they break their word, the president has as a tool already pre-passed sanctions that would set a stern, would be a pretty powerful message to the Iranians, we're not playing games.
No. If the deal were to close.
So they already don't even talk about even harder sanctions, or at least have something in place, and this is the left, something in place if the Iranians break their word, you know, which I can't see how people think that they're not going to, but what if, you know, it comes to the fact they're not going to be prepared, and then that's why I ask if the unraveling, you know, of the sanctions, because they're going to be lifted, and it's going to, you know, snowball, in which, you know, they're just going to continue to, you know, lift, you know, more and more of the sanctions, and then soon, you know, we'll have, maybe not, soon subjective, so maybe I shouldn't say that, you know, but in time, then Iran will have their nuclear, their weapons, which, remember years ago, is that, you know, when Obama was running, and they've been talking about Iran getting nuclear weapons for a long time, but when Obama was running, he was talking about, you know, how small and insignificant of a nation Iran is, and talking about, well, they're not that much of a threat, and pretty much, you know, he was of the mind that it wasn't a big deal that, you know, it wasn't a big deal if Iran was to get a nuclear weapon. So in my mind, I think, you know, he's just trying to, I'm not going to subscribe to any, you know, conspiracy thing that, you know, he's just helping to buy time for the Iranians, you know, because, anyway, I'm not going to go there. However, you know, I think that he's just trying to, you know, show, and of course, 2014 is coming, you know, and the Democrats are already in trouble, you know, with Obamacare, you know, and even some Democrats are even starting to shy away from it. So, you know, perhaps this is actually another ploy by, you know, President Obama to try to, you know, seal up the base, you know, by doing this, you know, fully knowing and fully aware that this is going to fail. And because he, and if they fail, I mean, in Obama's opinion, who cares? Because he already thinks that it would be okay that Iran gets a nuclear weapon. You know, no matter what he, you know, says, you know, in his stump speeches and things like that. I don't think he thinks it matters. So I actually have some transcripts here that I took from. I'm looking at from that Crossfire show I just took the clip from. And let's see if I can find what that gentleman's answer was, because I didn't have it in an audio clip. Let's see here. Let's see. Wow, there's a lot here. So I just pulled it up, so I'm not going to want to take a lot of dead air time so that I can, you know, find that one spot in the in those. But what I'll do is I can put this in the chat, these transcripts in the chat, and for those in the chat, you can read it later, or if you find that spot, call in and we can do that. But I do see it's already a quarter till the first hour, and I see as it's kind of a quiet night, and I understand why. We probably will have just an abbreviated version of the show this evening. So we'll probably, instead of going the normal 2 hours, maybe just go an hour or so and then retake up this discussion next week when we have more folks who would like to call and chime in, because here at Bard's Logic, we just don't want to hear the host talk, but I do like to, you know, hear the opinions of other folks as well. So we'll probably revisit this again. But for those who I told I would read this, someone sent me this on the email. One of the things I like to do here at Bard's Logic, Political Talk, is, you know, and you'll see if you go to the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, is that, you know, this is your show, the people's show. It's about the grassroots, and I have it out there. If someone has an issue that they want to discuss, or a topic or event, that they're more than welcome to bring it to my attention through the contact page of the website, and then we'd be more than happy to have it on here. Or if they just want to send me something, and, you know, on occasion I'll be able to read what they gave me on the show. And I did tell some people that I would read this on the show tonight. So for those who listen to the show, they'll be able to hear, whether it was live or on the archive, that I did. This is something one of my listeners sent to me, is that it says, I've never heard this said as simply or as well. Class war, and this is off topic, but it says class war at its best. It says, the folks who are getting the free stuff don't like the folks who are paying for the free stuff, because the folks who are paying for the free stuff can no longer afford to pay for both the free stuff and their own stuff. And the folks who are paying for the free stuff want the free stuff to stop. And the folks who are getting the free stuff want even more free stuff on top of the free stuff they are already getting. Now, the people who are forcing the people who pay for the free stuff have told the people who are receiving the free stuff that the people who are paying for the free stuff are being mean, prejudiced, and racist. People who are getting the free stuff have been convinced they need to hate the people who are paying for the free stuff by the people who are forcing some people to pay for their free stuff and giving them the free stuff in the first place. We have let the free stuff giving go on for so long that there are now more people getting free stuff than paying for the free stuff. Now understand this. All great democracies have committed financial suicide somewhere between 200 and 250 years after being founded. The reason? The voters figured out they could vote themselves money from the Treasury by electing people who promised to give them money from the Treasury in exchange for electing them. The United States officially became a republic in 1776, 236 years ago. The number of people now getting free stuff outnumbers the people paying for the free stuff. Failure to change that spells the end of the United States as we know it. Election 2014 is coming. A nation of sheep breeds a government of wolves. I am 100% for passing this on. For all of our sake, please take a stand. and here's other points. Obama gone, borders closed, language English only, culture God, Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, drug free, mandatory drug screening before welfare, no freebies to non-citizens. Only 86% will send this on. Should be 100. What will you do? And I want to thank Jerry for sending that to me, and I will be posting that shortly after the show on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook. So for those of you who are Facebook users, you can check that out and like the page. You can also look to join the group. So check it out, and I'll go ahead and copy it here and put it on now. Just give me a few moments. Let's see, I gotta take one. And let me get to the page here. And boy, I'm on Facebook right now, folks, and there is just not a lot going on. It is, well, as I said, it is the night before Thanksgiving. And I still have more happy birthday posts that I need to say thank you for. And, oh, I think we have one of our friends here who may want to chime in on the show. So let me open up their mic. 530, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, Robert, this is Kelly. And
hey, it's a good friend, Kelly Mordecai, one of the other panelists. I didn't know you're going to be calling in tonight, Kelly, but it's a pleasure to hear from you. Happy Eve on Turkey Night.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm thankful for, a bunch of Liberty folk that still get together, quite committed. We're changing the country. It's slow, but it's going to happen. I'm thankful. You know, before I say too much, we're thankful. Your introduction to me was real nice, except there was an assumption in that. Our friend, Kelly Mordecai, you assume I'm your friend.
Well, yeah, I guess I do. Well, I could be wrong, but, you know. Are you trying to tell me something, Kelly?
I like to tease people whenever possible. So.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. That's fine. Well, it's good to hear from you. And I just realized something that someone told me the other night is because I don't ever recall ever doing this, but through my understanding, the night before Thanksgiving is the largest party night of the year. Yeah, I guess
wow.
even more so than New Year's Eve. I always thought New Year's Eve was the biggest party night. I guess, it's been kind of quiet tonight. And now that I think about it, maybe that's it. Maybe you and I, instead of talking about what's going on with Iran, should be out knocking back some Jameson Irish whiskey that I'll say thank you to my wife tonight for giving me a bottle of that for my birthday. I'm not a real big whiskey person myself, but I do like to have a couple sips of some Irish whiskey. Of course, that's because I'm Irish.
Maybe she's trying to take advantage of you.
Well, that would be nice. She's welcome to do that any time, but I don't think it's Bard's Logic After Dark quite yet, Kelly.
That'll have to wait until
we get to that point. Right, at least until Bard's Logic After Dark.
Yeah. Well,
it's
kind of
like Cinemax, but different. Well, maybe I should have said that. That was kind of extreme.
Well, actually, let's kind of look at some logical facts here. Let's see here.
Oh, that's what I like to hear.
College kids are the ones that do most of the partying. They're home for the week for Thanksgiving vacation. They spend a couple days with their parents. Now they're getting bored. and they know they're going to spend the next day with their parents and grandparents, which to them is, okay, that's kind of boring. So, oh, wait, I can go out and party with my friends tonight at the bar. So I guess that would be probably why it's bigger than New Year's Eve.
That's a very good point. I never thought of that. Never thought of that, even when I was at college. Well, of course, I was in my 30s when I went to college. But life happens, and I didn't get the opportunity to go until then. So I guess my college party days were past before I even went to college.
Oh, I can't remember. What did you study in college?
My major was political science.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's kind of an oxymoron. Political science, science.
Well, it's a
what
social
science.
It's a social science.
That's a bigger oxymoron. So what is science?
Social science.
Yeah, what is science?
What is science?
Yeah, I happen to have a master's degree, Master of Science Engineering. Science is the study of repeatable events. Politics and human beings are not repeatable. They are so unpredictable. You know, what's going on with the clowns in Washington, D.C. is like, you know, this is not predictable. There is no science to political science.
I'll be honest with you, Kelly. I've never thought of that. I never thought of it that way.
Oh.
No wonder. Interesting.
Yeah,
so what do you think about, I think it's another failed, foreign policy decision on Obama's part. I mean, yeah, okay, we got to wait and see. It just started. But what do
you
think about the Iranian deal? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were leading to see. Yeah, I'm like, first of all, what do we expect? Of course, Obama, he's a Muslim/Christian, which I don't know how that works. Worship the moon god and then the Hebrew god. It's like, no, wait, you got to pick one or the other. You can't be a Christian. A Judeo-Christian is like, they just build Muslim. Oh, that's right. The Muslims can kind of cheat and lie and steal, get into power, and then do their destructive thing. Ha ha, see, I wasn't what I represented. I'm going to destroy you. that's your typical Muslim. Anyway, I mean, not your typical. I should say there are some really good Muslim people, folks, but there are some, the jihadist types. I'm not saying that Obama's jihadist. No, she would commit jihad. But anyway, Iran, come on, are you serious? Are you serious? Okay? This is a really hot zone, and you're not considering the Hebrews, and we have enormous support of the Hebrews in Israel. I don't know why they lean Democrat, but they do. So, all these influences, and he's just, like, ticking them off. And Israel is like, I'm sorry, we're going to go take out their new power plants if you guys sign this agreement, and then Russia's going to get involved. We've got a stinking mess here. It's like,
it's got potential.
This guy that hangs drapes for his wife, okay, you would think he'd be sensitive, especially when you're dealing in the world theater. I was like, are you out of your freaking mind? Of course, what do we expect? He's a Muslim.
And I'm glad you brought in about the Russians. And then, of course, there's China, too, who I mentioned earlier, is they just, took their aircraft carrier through the Taiwan Strait. And that definitely does not bode well.
I didn't know about that. That's a little
spooky. Yeah, that was just a recent happening today. I mean, that just happened today.
The Taiwan Strait has helped me. It's by Taiwan, right? But they're sending him over to Middle East, obviously.
Well, I don't know if they're sending it to the middle. I think they're kind of parking it there. I'm not parking it there, but it's going through because they're going to be doing some military trials there.
Drills. Exercises.
Drills, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
exercises and trials. I meant exercises.
Well, when we do these exercises, we just happen to have exercises going on. Oh, look, a terrorist bomb went off down the street. Let's go turn this exercise into a real thing. just a coincidence. You know, nothing to see here. Anyway. Putin, I listened to Janet Parshall in the Marketplace. I know it's kind of a Christian thing, but, you know, she's really got her finger on the pulse of what's going on around the world. And she communicated that Putin has killed 200,000 of his own people. Jeez, what the heck? I don't know. There's so many unpredictable forces. There's so many unconsidered consequences. There's so many, what the heck's going on here? And who can put their finger on what the heck's going on in the Middle East? And let's see. Oh, wait, I got to get out my political science book so it can tell me what to do next. what the heck? I'm just my hands are up in the air. I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Wow. Here's, I know I've been going to a lot of articles tonight, but, just happens that way sometimes. And I don't even know what this article is going to say, but it's from The Voice of Russia. So I'm presuming it's a Russian. And so it just says, success of talks on Iran's nuclear program, a result of stamina of Iranian leaders, Assad. Iran's success at the talks with the sextet of negotiating countries, five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany, over its national nuclear program has become possible thanks to the huge staying power of its... Are they talking about nuclear weapons? Are they talking about something else? No, I'm just kidding. It's not Bart's Logic in the Dark yet. Thanks to the huge staying power of its people and leadership, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said Wednesday, seriously, if Syria is saying this stuff, come on, folks. Said Wednesday in a telephone conversation with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. The success of the Islamic Republic in reaching this agreement became possible thanks to the staying power of the Iranian people. Bullshit. The Iranian people don't have nothing to do. Oh, did I say that? Oops, I didn't mean to say the actual S word. The staying power of the Iranian people.
Logic is a clean show. It is. Oh, and I'm teasing you again.
It usually is. It just right now, I couldn't believe I just read that. Because the Iranian people, you know, whatever. Anyway, I mean, I don't have anything against the Iranian people. I mean, for these people, for the media there, acting like they can talk for the Iranian people. And defense of its rights, as well as the leadership's position that has been firm from the very beginning and that has proceeded from the principle of safeguarding Iran's sovereignty and independent decision-making, he said. Well, fine, then let Israel take them out. No. The accord reached by Iran and Geneva consolidated its position at the regional level as well as in the international arena, Assad said. He expressed the confidence that Tehran's actions reaffirm the developing country's right to develop its own civilian nuclear power production. Well, we know what that's leaked to. Iran's six-month nuclear freeze period not started, EU. Iran's six-month temporary rollback of its nuclear activities agreed to in the recent deal has not begun, and the start date has not yet been set, a spokesperson for the World Power Chief Negotiator said Wednesday. Let's see this article. Okay, this is 2:33 a.m. on November 28th, so it's already... I guess it's Russia. So, let's see. I'm getting back. It will also depend on the outcome of the technical discussions with Iran, and there were secret talks a lot between Iran and Washington, discussed with Iran about the implementation arrangement that will take place soon, he said. In a major breakthrough Sunday in Geneva, Iran agreed with the United States, China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, the P5+1, to freeze some of its nuclear work in exchange for minor sanctions relief. This six-month stop is meant to make it more difficult for Iran to develop a nuclear weapon and to build confidence while Tehran and the P5+1 hammer out a long-term accord. One Western diplomat in Vienna, headquarters of the UN Atomic Watchdog, said they expected the 6 months to begin in January, so they got a whole month to ramp things up before then, it looks like, and that the expert-level talks would likely take place next week. It is all understandably vague, but my understanding is that the 6 months starts in January, the diplomat said. Which, wow, you know, we've got to hear this, because I've been looking, you know, all over different articles and watching different, of the talk shows to find out information on this subject, and it's taking a Russian article to tell me that, you know, to be the ones to inform that these things, talk, you know, that are supposed to come about in the talks aren't even start the 6 month period isn't even going to start until January. And that's the first I've heard about that. But anyway, it's the experts are going to be talking next week about how you translate that document, Sunday's deal, into something which is more specific and practical. The momentum behind this is really very strong. Everyone realizes we have a limited opportunity to get this right. The six powers, Iran and UN watchdog, the International Atomic Energy Agency, are to create a joint commission to work out exact timing and how the IAEA will monitor Iran's compliance. A second diplomat told AFP that these technical and logistical details need to be worked out in the coming days, but that a specific time frame for these meetings is still being determined. The freeze involves Iran's limiting uranium enrichment. That means it doesn't stop it. It's limiting uranium enrichment to low fissile purities for half a year and lowering the purity or converting to another form of its entire stockpile of medium-enriched materials, which is relatively easy, I repeat, relatively easy to convert to weapons grade. Okay, folks, so while we're hearing all this talk about, this is going to slow down their ability to make nuclear weapons, the freeze involves limiting, I'm going to repeat this, it's important, the freeze involves Iran limiting uranium enrichment to low fissile purities for half a year and lowering the purity of converting to another form of its entire stockpile of medium-enriched material, which is relatively easy to convert to weapons grade. What do you think about that, Kelly? He must have muted himself. Are you still with us, Kelly? There you are. You must have muted yourself. That's okay. Yeah, there's the background. So what do you think about that? Yeah. You know, so all this time we're like, oh, but it sounds like even if they are downgrading these centrifuges or what have you I've been hearing about, then it's not going to take much to bring them back to weapons-grade, weapons-grade material.
Well, I want to throw out a bigger picture argument, if you will, to explain this smoke and mirrors game. All right, the right to bear arms, okay? The right to defend yourself. The right to defend yourself is natural. It's a God-given right. It's nature. It is, you know. Of course, you know, pacifists aren't very good at...
Thank you for bringing up nature. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, pacifists aren't very good at understanding their natural rights to defend yourself or their family. But you know what? You know, when it comes down to it, even pacifists will become avid supporters of the Second Amendment and self-defense. Anyway, so this BS of, I'll just agree to whatever you want, you know, yeah, come in and rape my wife. No. It doesn't work, okay? So bigger picture, Second Amendment, you know, Congress can pass endless laws, and we're still going to have people out of my cold, dead hands, okay? Second Amendment. We go to nations. They have the right to defend themselves. They have the right to build nuclear weapons. And, you know, they might placate with a bunch of lies, a bunch of trees, a bunch of BS games, but they're still going to do it. Okay? I mean, I'm sorry. It's kind of a natural right when you bring the natural laws of self-defense on a national level. So we have the situation where Iran is kind of playing his games, and, really, seriously, no treaty is going to do squat, okay? It ain't going to work. And I think the Hebrews, which, by the way, if you understand Hebrew culture, they rely heavily, heavily upon what is natural. What is natural? If it's natural, it's good. If it violates your conscience, we've got a problem. But they're big on natural. When they understand what is natural, they realize these natural rights I just described, and they're going to say, are you guys out of your freaking mind? Iran is not going to respect this. Iran is going to be doing nuclear arms wherever they can and have this placated, stupid treaty. And I can understand why now the Hebrews, when you understand their culture, I can understand why the Hebrews are very upset about this, which could lead us to World War III because the Russians are saying this, the Chinese are saying this, and all these players are saying this. We're just, and then you got these stupid liberals who have a creative reality system that, let's just all get along. I'm going to create a fantasy world. We're all going to get along and see, we did a nice little treaty. Well, yeah, right. Okay, let's get real. I'm saying things from a different perspective, but the point is Iran's not going to respect it. The Israelites are not going to – we got a mess brewing. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and then I think that while this is going on, I mean, the timing of what China is doing as well, you know, going in between, in the Taiwan Strait, I think it's no accident that they chose now to make that move.
I mean, the Chinese are another people that are more into what's natural. Native American folks, I got Indian friends, you know. What is natural? And natural is people that defend themselves and for nations to have nuclear weapons. I mean, a bazillion treaties, a bazillion weapons inspections, who cares? They're going to be convinced that they have the right to bear arms. And the treaty isn't going to work, okay? It's just not going to work. So we got people playing games between their ideal creative world of what they, we want to have all this nicey, everybody get along, warm and fuzzies, to, and everybody knows subtly in the back of their mind that this ain't going to work because of the natural rights to defend oneself. It's just like, you know, the ingredients for a mess. That's what I'm, that's my end bottom line here.
Well, I think Taiwan is, I think there's going to be some, there's some concern, you know, with China and Taiwan, because, you know, China's been wanting to get, re-annex Taiwan back to, you know, back to the mainland for decades now. And I think that, you know, if they're going to see the United States as weak, I think they're going to be poised to try to take that back. And supposedly, you know, we're supposed to buy the, I think it's the Taiwan Agreement or Taiwan Accord, not Accord, but I'll have to look that back up, to actually defend Taiwan in the event of, China trying to militarily bring them back.
Yeah, but we're kind of... When dealing with the Chinese, which, by the way, Nixon did a good thing in opening economics, trade, commerce, that was a good thing. But all of a sudden, you know, China is very powerful. And any prudent, decent, well-thought-through leader realizes you don't really mess with China. You do it with very careful consideration, very careful counsel. And that is in the best of cases where you have a strong leader. We don't have a strong leader. I mean, my gosh,
right.
Come on. We don't have a strong leader, and China's – Obama blew Assyria, and the world is looking with enormous contempt upon Obama, and the Chinese are just going to say, we're doing what we think is – we don't care.
Right.
And
that does not bode well for Taiwan.
No, it doesn't. So – of course, Russia, we know Russia and China are big allies, and
with Iran.
So, I mean, a lot of it has to do with oil. I mean, China has a nation to feed. They're becoming industrialized. They have problems with their environment, but that's kind of the natural flow of nations when they go from, let's get resources to, now we're kind of rich, let's kind of care about the environment.
Right.
Russia,
exactly.
Russia has river fires where they have dump so much pollution but they've got a nation to feed. So I understand that, and that kind of creates a lot of desperation on the point of China. And you know, there's so many ingredients involved in this whole situation. It can get real ugly, and you know, and we've got a weak leader. Okay, I don't know what to say. This is complex and it's complicated, and I'm just kind of throwing out some of the factors, but I'm like, geez, what a mess.
I'm actually just reading a post here on Facebook, I must be honest, that my wife sent me on Facebook. She just sent me a message, you know, about my birthday.
Oh, by the way, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah, she just sent me a message there. And I said, oh, I'm having fun talking to my friend, Kelly Mordecai, and Bard's Logic Political Talk. I know I'm being presumptuous by saying your friend. So. But anyway, I digress, which, you know, sometimes I do. But maybe it's because Turkey Day is tomorrow. I don't know. But, you know, get serious. So, yeah, and that, you know, it's I think it's just another failed, you know, it's going to prove out to be, especially if China, you know, starts to push its weight around and starts some saber rattling over there. I think it could be just more example of Obama's failed foreign policy.
Yeah.
I mean, as you pointed out, he's weak. He's a weak leader. You know, we need something strong. Unfortunately, we were stuck with the guys till, you know, 2016, you know, and who knows who's going to be the person to replace him. Certainly, I hope certainly not Clinton, but, you know, I'm hearing a lot of talk about, you know, her running, and some people, you know, believe that's kind of a foregone conclusion that if she does run, she'll be the victor, which, man, I don't even want to – I think she'd be just as bad as Obama, but –
Well, actually, the powers that be are already telling us who are going to be the front runners.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I think they're, you know, they're saying, of course, Hillary Clinton, and then the Republican side is saying, like, Chris Christie. Like, really?
Well, actually, Chris Christie keeps kind of denying that he wants to run for president, which is a great maneuver to become the president. And Marco Rubio,
right.
Well, there's a Gallup poll, and Marco Rubio versus Hillary Clinton for the 2016 election, and, you know, it's like a 47-45. However, Chris Christie scores a little bit better with 46%. It's like, wait a minute. Can I call timeout? Can I blow a whistle and say, whoa, flag on the field, timeout, whoa, stop the bus, back up the train, what's going on here? Oh, wait. We have congressional rating right now lower than 10%. We had what? For over a year, it's been less than 20% in Congress. They're filled with Democrats, Republicans. We've got this terrible, let's see. And wait a minute. You expect the American people to vote for one of two parties that have a rating of less than 10% approval? What? Wait, huh?
Well, maybe we'll be talking more again about alternative parties, you know? I mean, personally, I think it's time for a multi-party system in America. I mean, I really do. I think it's time. I think that the the Democrat-Republican two-party paradigm, I think it needs to change, and I think it's ceasing to work for the United States. I really think it's not working for the people anymore. But I mean, that's probably because in a lot of ways the two parties are becoming so close together, it's really hard to differentiate themselves besides arguments. You know, but I mean, you can argue all day long, but if the, you know, the opposition, a quote-unquote opposition party, just pretty much gives in to what the other party wants, and it's really not much of an opposition party, is it?
Well, I've got my, I recently got a micrometer. I'm using it for mad scientist things. But, you know, I got a micrometer, and I'm ready for the next election to measure the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Rhetoric?
Rhetoric, yeah, okay. Yeah,
you know, and I'm kind of sick of them talking about the conservatives trying to bring the Republican Party to the right, and it's going to make them lose elections. I mean, seriously, I mean, look at Romney. Was he a conservative? No. That's why he lost. You know what I mean? It's like, ugh.
Well, what I thought was hilarious was when in the primaries they asked the Romulan questions about the Constitution. And he goes, oh, you asked a constitutional question. Why don't we ask our constitutionalist? He looks right over and does a hand gesture right towards Ron Paul. And everybody laughs because it's like, yeah, you don't know the Constitution, you schmuck.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You're going to uphold something you don't understand.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I don't know if I've told you this story before, but it's still worth telling every time. So I was sitting in my office working away. I'm in a mini mall, and I don't know, some guy was trying to run for county supervisor, and he walks in. I don't remember his name. Oh, I'm such and such. I'm running for county supervisor. Oh, really? Oh, okay, what are you about? Well, I'm about blah, da, 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 da. Okay, do you know about the 9th and 10th Amendment? This is my job interview question for him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, oh, I really believe in the Constitution. Yeah, that's a really good idea. The Bill of Rights, too. That's not what I'm asking. Do you know about, can you tell me what the 9th and 10th Amendments are? Constitution, good idea. It's like, no. I know it's a good idea. I'm asking you. What's the 9th and 10th Amendments? He goes, well, I don't know.
Wow.
Well, quite specific about states' rights. Since you don't know that, sir, I will not be voting for you. I'm sorry. Tony Antiso, he knows all this. I'm going to vote for him because he knows about this. I'm sorry. If you don't know this, you shouldn't even be running for office. Okay. Well, yeah, good luck with your campaign. Oh, maybe you'll do well, but, later. And of course, he got creamed. Anyway, so I've done this a number of times with people that come to Tea Party meetings. You know what, Article 9 and 10 of Bill Rice, you're running for office, you might want to do that. Well, one of them got a B+, maybe a C, okay, passing grade. Why do I ask this? Okay, well, let's suppose this is a job interview, okay? Let's see, what's important of the Constitution? Well, let's write Supreme Law of the Land. You're going to write legislation based upon the Supreme Law of the Land. If you don't know it, you're going to be like, this is bad. All right, so let's suppose, paint another scenario where there's a manufacturing firm, economy was low, housing industry. So I go to a manufacturing firm, they make me take a math test.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, math is either right or wrong. Sorry. So I take a math test. I probably, 97, 99%, I don't care. But what if I told the HR person who was interviewing me, oh, math is a really good idea. Yeah, math is great. I really like math, huh? It's really powerful. Okay, do you know what 2 and 2 is? Oh, that's a really good idea, I love math. It's great. It's really powerful. Yeah, but do you know what 2 and 2 is? Well, I like math. Or like you. Okay, so you got this.
I like math.
Yeah. I'm so like this doctor, okay? Yeah, so a doctor, doctor position is advertised with a local paper, okay? Some guy shows up and says, what do you know about medicine? Oh, medicine's a really good idea. Yeah, I like healing the sick, and I like the idea of helping people, and, nurses are pretty hot, I really like medicine. Okay, what do you know about medicine? Oh, medicine's a really good idea. It's like, so these idiots who are running for office don't know the Constitution, they fail their job interview, and yet we vote for an R or D?
You know what? I mean, what's wrong? I mean, seriously, what is wrong with our politicians nowadays? I mean, I was watching an interview with Newt Gingrich the other day, and I'm working on a little project that I'm probably going to start in the next couple of weeks, or maybe after the holidays, pending. I was listening to this interview with Newt Gingrich, and just to hear what his ideas are. He's got a new book out called Breakout. I definitely want to check it out and read it. And I know some about it. It's a nonpartisan book that he broke out that he put out. And basically, it's kind of about the politicians, regardless of party, can do for America, and talking about, American exceptionalism. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, whoever talks about American exceptionalism anymore, do you ever hear about it? I mean, of course, they're talking about it around, JFK's, remembering JFK, especially his talk about going to the moon, and then within 8 years, doing it. you know, we don't talk about those kind of things anymore. Now, there was actually some things in the interview that I will have a, you know, show in the future that I'll play it, that I didn't quite agree with, you know, but or at least I'd want to have some more clarification on that Newt said about smartphones and how every kid should have a smartphone. I don't know. He never really said that the government should give them to them, but he talked about maybe in schools. But I'm thinking, well, if, you know, you're a public school giving cell phones, I don't know. It kind of sounded like Obama phones to me, which, I don't know, maybe not, I'm jaded or something, and maybe that isn't what he meant, but it kind of sounded that way to me, but I don't know. I know what the high school went, you know, I'm going to be sending my daughter to. I mean, they're all going to have laptops, but of course, you know, that's part of the tuition you pay, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But, well, you know, I'll get back to that. It's part of a project I'm working out. But, you know, back to the main point, though, but he's talking about American exceptionalism. I mean, what can America do when it comes to, you know, technology? And, you know, I just think we've got, you know, so many things such as, you know, have to deal with foreign policy. Is that, and let's bring this question up. I mean, I'm kind of torn to ask this question, but is it the United States' responsibility to curtail Iran from getting nuclear weapons? I mean, I'm not saying I want Iran to get nuclear weapons because I think it'd be bad for our allies, especially Israel. But I think, I don't know. What do you think, Kelly? I mean, you think that maybe that's something that, why are we even the ones dealing with it? I mean, people complain all the time about, you know, the United States sticking their nose in everybody's business, but yet if the United States didn't, well, who would? You know, who would be the ones to try to curtail Iran or even have the ability to curtail Iran from getting nuclear weapons? And is it even our place? Because I know there's other folks on even on our side in the libertarian saying, look, you know, that's not our place to be dabbling in the affairs of other countries. So what is the best scenario for the United States? I mean, do we stay out of it and let other use our time and our resources to try to keep a nation like Iran from getting a nuclear weapon? And be the police of the world, because some people, you know, there's people on the right who on one breath say they don't want us to be the police of the world, but, you know, in the same breath, they want us to be the ones to curtail Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. So, I mean, which one is it? I mean, what's the best scenario? I mean, I know it's, as I said, I'll reiterate that it's, you know, it's bad. It would be definitely bad for our allies, such as Israel, for them to get a nuclear weapon, but is it our place to be the ones to do that? No, of course, you know, I'm all for the United States being, you know, the hegemonic power of the, you know, of the world, because if we're not going to be, someone's going to. I mean, that's just realism. Someone's going to be the main power of the world, and better the United States than someone else. But what does that put us in the position of using our resources towards that instead of using our resources to better better our technologies and our research and things of that nature? What do you think?
Well,
I know I said a mouthful,
I'm going to go big picture on you again.
Well, that's good.
Do you know what the psychological term of codependency is?
Yes.
Can you tell me what it is?
What, codependency?
Yeah.
Well, you know, basically codependency is where you have two or more, you know, entities, whether it's people, countries, what have you, that in order for one to act, one to act, they rely on someone else in order to be able to do that, or they rely on another one to keep them safe so that they can move on. I think that's actually something that could have hurt us, is that, you know, we had such like Europe being codependent, you know, on, well, and I think that's, okay, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but I'll just leave it at that, and then I'll do some next, you know, some actual details of where I see them trying to work on codependence. And I think, and I'll say this before we move on, I think that's what the United States is trying to do with China, is build some kind of codependency so we don't end up in a war. But we'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
Codependency in a personal relationship is where my value of myself and my great self-esteem is based upon how well I change you, okay, or how well I make up for your faults. You know, the great, there's a classic light bulb joke is, how many alcoholics does it take to screw in a light bulb? The answer, well, none. The codependent will do it for him. So when we get codependent, basing our own value and self-worth and self-esteem by changing others, we are emotionally sick. And so when we start dabbling in other nations' affairs, we are codependent, and it's sick. And this is another problem with even with our own country, Massachusetts, who, you know, they love gay marriage. Woohoo, gay marriage. Okay, your state, God bless you. You do your own thing. I'm 2,000 miles away. I don't care. But you know what? Don't you dare tell Texas to bend over and accept gay marriage, because the Texans will be pretty
really?
Serious.
Are you really going to use that analogy? Sorry, Kelly, go ahead.
Well, how much more clear can I make this? All right, so how do Massachusetts enforce their will upon Texas? It's by being codependent as expressed through the federal government. And then we got a bunch of nation states who are trying to be codependent and change Iran either out of fear because, oh, Iran might have a bomb. Oh, goodness. Let's go to war against Iraq because they might have weapons of mass destruction. You know, there's just enormous amount of codependency here, okay? My life is way more successful when I realize, you know what, I control me. I'm going to worry about me. Wow, wait a minute. Good news for me, Kelly Mordecai. I don't have to worry about other people. Oh, my gosh. Critical now, being on a political talk show, talking about how we should run our country. Oh, but wait, I want the government to back off. So back off and leave me alone and stop being so damn codependent upon me. It's kind of hypocritical to be talking about politics when you're trying to oppose codependency. But from the perspective of just back off, that's why I'm here. So anyway, we are codependent and trying to change other nations and influence other nations. And when we are ruled by our own personal fear, then we try to control others, which is another factor. It's not codependent, it's just fear. I just like, you know, and we got our own problems at home, but we're not taking care of our own self. What's the problem with the classic codependent? Oh, that's right, their life is a mess. They're not taking care of themselves. They're trying to take care of their others and get their significance out of taking care of others. We are chronically sick. And so we're dabbling in things that we don't understand, in cultures we don't understand, when we're neglecting so many things here, when if we were to focus on the greatness of America, we were just talking about that, if we were to focus on the greatness of America and what we've achieved and great motivations, you know, Ronald Reagan was an awesome motivator. He felt good to be an American. JFK got us to the moon. He did some other really good things. He felt great to be an American. It's like, oh, wait. Let's get out of Vietnam. Oh, sorry, you happen to be assassinated after you talked about that in Executive Order 11110. Anyway, so he was trying to take care of things at home. Of course, Ron Paul did that, and amazing similarities between JFK and Ron Paul, and, well, he wasn't killed, he was crucified at the Republican National Convention. So what's going on here? Why are we, if we happen to take care of things at home, leave other countries alone, we'd start to prosper. When we have been a world leader for how many hundreds of years now in technology, if we focus on this, then we can attract people to commerce with us again like we used to be. And through that, there's enormous power for peace. When we attract people to our, oh, that's right, we still got people coming into our nation here, but
Well, that's not for our peace. That's for our...
yeah, economic...
That's for our pocket.
Yeah, economic benefit is a phenomenal influence for peace. And instead, we're using force to bring peace. I mean, what happened here? In our government... Oh, by the way, have you heard of the Pacific Trade Agreement? I don't want to get into that, but we're basically undermining our own people at home again. I just...
Mm-hmm.
What is wrong with our country? This classic codependent behavior. Your life's a mess, so you try to fix and change other people, other nations. I mean, you fix yourself, and all of a sudden life gets better, and then you realize, why am I trying to change people? Because my life's so good. I feel just
like what about the argument that the United States is pretty much the only country that can stop, you know, Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, thus protecting our allies. Of course, I think Israel is well capable of protecting themselves.
So
we need to just let them do it.
Yeah.
Here's how I see it. And before I do that, here's how I see it. I see that if Iran is going to be stopped getting a nuclear weapon, okay, here's how I see it. If Iran is to be stopped peacefully from getting a nuclear weapon through diplomacy, then I think the United States is the only country that could do that, and this is why. Because Israel, who would be, in my opinion, the most directly affected by a nuclear, weapons from Iran, Israel would be the most immediately affected. However, I don't think that Israel would have any diplomatic way of dealing with or trying to halt Iran getting or becoming nuclear weapons or obtaining nuclear weapons because you're not going to have any Israeli diplomats that are going to be listened to in Iran.
You nail it right there. They hate the Hebrews. The Middle East, they just hate the Hebrews. I mean, yeah, there's some Saudi Arabia, maybe not, but Iran, Iraq, forget it. They hate the Hebrews. And so we got a problem here in that, yeah, diplomatic approaches may not work. They're not going to listen.
Right. Yeah, not from the country that's going to be most directly affected by it, which is Israel. They won't listen to them. So what I'm getting at is that the only means that the country that would be most affected by Iran becoming a nuclear power, okay, that the only option they have is military. It's the only option they have. They can only Iran from getting a nuclear weapon militarily if Israel was to do it. But the United States, it's different. I mean, we could do it militarily, of course. But the United States is the only country, in my opinion, because I think it's the only country that has the gonads to do it, is to try to do it with diplomacy, even though I really don't think diplomacy is going to work. I'd love to see diplomacy work. As I said earlier in the show, I consider getting my master's in diplomacy, I don't think any other country, for one, will take up the mantle to try to do it. And the countries that would try to do it would be nations that we wouldn't want to be the ones doing it, such as Russia or China trying to negotiate with Iran, because that certainly wouldn't be in the best interest of the United States.
Well, there's all sorts of factors involved in this. First of all, Israel, okay? Their Mossad is better than our CIA. okay? And if they have the intelligence to realize, oh, my gosh, the Iranians are going to be building nukes and playing right at us, if they can confirm that, which, again, their intelligence is way above ours, if they, I mean, you got a little tiny country, you got a bunch of people that don't want to annihilate you off the planet, you got people working night and day to ensure their security. So if Iran, if Israel comes to the position that, yeah, they're building them and they're going to point them right at us, they may have under the preemptive clause, or even maybe once they launch one nuclear, then they just go in and they just conquer Iran. I mean, that would be their sovereign right. So what is our part of this? Well, if we have a treaty with them, then we have an ally, and we have to figure out how much is it worth, because we might draw in Russia and China in a massive war. It's kind of a mess. You know, there's so many factors to look at here, like, yeesh. But, of course, what you do, I mean, this is a requirement before you go to war, is a serious attempt at diplomacy, which, you know, FDR didn't like do much diplomacy with the Japanese. He just cut off their trade routes, and then they bombed Pearl Harbor. So anyway, diplomacy has to be exhausted, and except for you can make diplomacy where you piss off your allies, you upset them because you didn't really consider them into the whole situation. You didn't consider their input.
Right, like,
so
looks
have,
like what Obama's doing.
Exactly. It's like lame diplomacy. Yeah, we're doing something. No, you're not. It's a shell game, and it's, you know, this is a mess. This is an ugly mess. And I'm not sure what Obama's thinking. Of course, maybe I don't want to know what he's thinking. Anyway, this is a mess. It's a very complicated mess. I'm just going to acknowledge that. It's complicated, but knowing who's in charge here, we're cooking up and we're throwing into the cookie bowl ingredients for a disaster.
Yeah. So what's the answer? I mean, what do you propose should be done about Iran's nuclear weapons program?
I would suggest, which they're not doing, I would suggest seriously talking with the Hebrews and find out, hey, what do you guys know? What are your concerns? What do you think? Have you talked with Iran? Can we sit down and talk with Iran? When we get all these concerns opened up, aired out, we have a discussion. And let's see how Iran responds. And, sir, the Hebrews are our ally. We'd like, hey, you know, okay, well, but we're not involving the Israelites enough in this situation. I mean, obviously, if the Israelites are pretty furious at this whole agreement, whatever thing they cooked up, then obviously we didn't involve the Israeli nation in this discussion well enough. And again, I go back to, we've got the ingredients for a mess.
Yeah, we definitely should have brought them into the fore. I mean, they've got their own sovereignty, but of course, you know, Iran is even saying, hey, look, we are a sovereign nation, so we should have the right to have nuclear weapons because, you know, Israel has, you know, nuclear weapons. There's other nations in the world that have nuclear weapons, you know, and because they're a sovereign nation, they should have the right to have nuclear weapons themselves, and that's their argument, you know.
Well, I mean, the other factors are, okay, Iran, how do you feel threatened that you need to go to nuclear weapons? I mean, do you have somebody wanting to invade you? Oh, that would be the U.S., but anyway, so who are you concerned about invading you that you need nuclear weapons? Just let us know, and we can bring those people to the table, and we can start to talk, too. What's going on here? You know, this is why foreign policy gets so complicated so quickly. But it's all settled when everybody sits down and we talk. We figure out what's going on and who's lying and who's not and what's real and what's not. It gets to be extremely complicated, but what Obama did basically was not carefully consider his moves. Go back to the
We have to carefully consider anything. Look at Obamacare. I mean, look at the mess that is. You know, he's kind of like the who was that Greek? I think it was a Greek guy who everything he touched turned into gold or something like that. You know, what was the story? I can't remember who that was.
Mythology,
kind of, I don't know. Yeah, some kind of, where everything the guy touched turned to gold. I can't quite remember what that is. If anybody can remember that, just just type it in the chat. I can't remember who that was, but it seems like everything Obama touches is just turns into a mess. I mean, seriously, I mean, look at Obamacare. Look at this, foreign policy. I mean, it's just a mess.
You know what might be happening, and by the way, this happened with Syria. People under him are saying, look, are you out of your freaking mind? A lot of generals and military folk said, are you out of your freaking mind? We're not going to go and invade Syria. What could be happening is Obama is having such poor ratings that people under him are just not going to do what he says. I mean, he's obviously lost an enormous amount of respect. So
on all kinds of fronts, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, 2014 is going to be interesting with, we're going to have a lame duck president. I don't know, but Jimmy Carter's really happy these days. He's just elated.
Yeah, he's not the worst president in American history anymore. Or at least in modern history.
Yeah, so. Anyway.
Yeah, so it comes down, one of the things it comes down to is how involved does the United States get, in the whole process?
Well, it's based on our treaties, but it's also based on just common sense. You know, there's something amazing that happened with the SALT treaties with Russia. What happened out of those meetings, on paper, there's several forms of communication. Of course, there's body language, there's written, there's verbal, and there's let's have a meeting, let's have a talk. Not a great amount was accomplished with the SALT treaties, but what was happening was people were talking. Russians, Americans, we were talking, and both sides were saying, we don't want nuclear war. And we understand this is a problem. So they had another SALT treaty, and then another SALT treaty talk. But they were talking. They kept the lines open. That was huge.
Yeah, well, and that comes back to a problem I think that, we talked about, just minutes ago, is that I think one of the biggest problems is, you can't get Iran and Israel to the table to talk to each other, without someone like the United States being involved.
Right. I mean, yes, we are the world's most powerful military force the world's ever seen, but do we do that? Was it Teddy Roosevelt? Walk softly, carry a big stick. Do we still have the mentality, or do we come across as a bully? Are we insensitive? Oh, that's a sign of a bully. It's not just having the power. It's not just sitting in a meeting. It's the demeanor. It's the manner in which people conduct themselves. It's their politeness. It's their openness. It's, okay, what is true, what is not? What does intel say? What is other nations? What's going on? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. There's a whole bunch of factors here. And, I just think Obama is quite insensitive to the region. I'm just thinking out loud, but gosh, foreign policy is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And yet common sense and earnestness and talking can solve an awful lot of problems. But Obama didn't seem to have that ability, so now we have a mess.
Yeah, he shouldn't be very inept in a lot of things. I mean, it's amazing. Well, and that's what happens. I mean, I'm not trying to bring back the election stuff again, but I mean, and that, and I'm talking about the very first one, not the second election, his reelection. I mean, but that's what you get when you have someone who had zero experience the way he did to try to run the most, you know, powerful country in the world. I mean, literally the leader of the free world. I mean, when you have someone whose biggest experience was a few years in the Senate and a community organizer with no real foreign policy experience, I mean, look what you're going to get.
Well, he was successful as a community organizer.
Yeah, well, yeah, a community organizer within like minds, but, I mean, how successful is he in dealing with people who aren't on the, you know, thinking, you know, the same way he is?
Well,
not very, I mean, Reagan was called the great communicator for nothing, you know what I mean? I mean,
right.
I mean, you know, Obama certainly is not that. I mean, but, you know, we are stuck with him for the next 3 years unless he gets impeached. Of course, then we're stuck with Biden. You know, I mean, I think that's why he picked Biden, because then they'd be more afraid to impeach him. We're like, oh, gosh, he only impeaches God. We're going to have an idiot Biden, you know?
Right. Yeah. Joe, may I call you Joe? Do you remember that when Sarah Palin said that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Well, yeah, because he was older, and instead of calling him Mr. Biden, I guess it's a respect thing or something. I don't know. You know, but certainly, I mean, it's complicated. We got to figure out, you know, what the United States' role is. I mean, that's why when people say, oh, well, we don't want to be the world's police. And believe me, I understand that, and in ways I agree with it. But I mean, if not the United States, then who? Because if Israel, as I said earlier, and to bring him the point. You know, the only way they can deal with the Iranians' nuclear weapons program is to basically have a military strike. The only way we can have any kind of reasonable, peaceful agreement is through the United States, thus making us, you know, part of, you know, the police of the world, because we certainly don't want, you know, it coming from China or Russia. Because if we were in, I mean, I fully believe that if we weren't in there trying to negotiate something, and I think, you know, negotiations are fine if we can put in ways like Newt Gingrich suggested, you know, with, hey, let's have stronger sanctions in place as a case, you know, the Iranians don't keep their word, you know, have that as a backup. You know, I think that's, you know, that's important. I think we do need to have, you know, talks, but I just don't think that we have the right people in there doing it, you know, so... You know, I'll go back to it. If not the United States, then who? And unfortunately, I think at this point, we're the only ones who can do it. But I don't think it's going to be done right just because of the people, you know, that we have in there, you know, doing the diplomacy and doing the deals. I mean, it kind of puts me in a quandary. With, you know, us kind of sticking and keeping our noses out of other people's business.
Yeah, that's, I mean, does Obama want peace or does he want war? Does he want his Muslim brothers to get control of a country like Egypt or Syria? Or does he want peace? I'm scratching my head over the whole scenario.
Well, let's find out what I believe Cindy thinks. Is that you, Cindy, on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome to the last 5 minutes of the live portion of the show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I've come in late because I was doing the baby shower for my daughter, so I don't really know what you've said so far, but there's a lot of possibilities as to why he is doing what he's doing in the Middle East. What his Middle East policy, there's so many things that could be going on in his head. First of all, the the Muslim community that he grew up in over in Indonesia is a different, it's different for, in two ways from it is from what it is now. It's become much more militant in the last 10 or 15 years, and even 20 years. And he probably didn't see a lot of that over there. Most of it was going on in the Middle East. It's full-fledged a bad place to be in the Philippines, I mean, in Indonesia now. There's a lot of, according to the Voice of the Martyrs, Christians are really being persecuted there right now. But he probably didn't see any of that. So it's hard to say he may or may not understand the magnitude of the hatred that those Islamists have for Christians, Jews, Americans in general, Europeans in general. We're all infidels. And they really, there's a large faction of them that just don't want to have anything to do with us. Not only that, but it's like in the Quran, I believe, chapter 4, where it says that you're supposed to kill them, kill the infidels wherever you find them. And not only kill the infidels wherever you find them, but kill other Arabs who refuse to
right.
worship Allah the way that you worship Allah. And I don't think he's seen a lot of that. So that could be a lot of the reason why his Middle East policy is so weak and so, it's just full of holes. Again, it could be because he knows exactly what the goals are.
And real quick, I just want to tell the listeners who are listening live, there's only about a minute left of the lifetime, and we will be going really some into the extended period, but if you'd like to listen to the extended version, call in at 347-945-7428. Again, that number to call in to listen to the extended version is 347-945-7428. Because in about a minute, you will no longer be able to hear the show unless you call in. But, of course, if you don't listen to the extended version live, you are welcome to listen and share the link to the archives later on, available immediately after the show. Thank you very much, Cindy. Sorry for interrupting, but I did want to get that out to the folks who are listening out there. Go ahead.
Oh, that's no problem. I know you got to do that. And like I was saying, then the another thing could be that he's one of them. I mean, and he's as Muslim as we have feared that he is, and that he is more than willing to help the Muslims take over the Western world. It could also be that he could be as far to the fundamentalist Sharia laws that he actually agrees with Iran's plan to annihilate everybody and bring on the 12th Imam. I mean, he could be that bad. Or it could be that he is just part of that Illuminati CFR group that are using the Muslims to create enough havoc that they can institute martial law here in the United States and all around, and eventually just have the whole earth just nothing but a big police state. And, of course, they get all the power and all the wealth, and we are their slaves. We go back to serfdom. And the times of the Dark Ages and, you know, just the worst possible scenario. So,
you know, I get a question I've been wondering, and for my for you folks and for the folks listening. Now, through my understanding, the Illuminati are Masons, correct?
Yes, but they're not.
And are Masons not Christians?
Well, here, see, this is the thing. I argue with this over my mother. She was married to a Mason. And the things that they do are totally different. They're not connected to that elite. It's a total different order. I don't know that they have anything to do with each other. There's a whole group of Masons. You can go all the way up to the 32nd degree or even above that, I think. I'm not sure exactly how many they have, but you can go all the way up there and never see anything to do with what those people are all about. The Masons have just become sort of a good old boy mutual congratulatory society where they, you know, raise money to help kids, and they go have their parades and their banquets and all the things that they like to do. They golf, they fish, they, you know, depending on what part of the country they're from, they have their meetings and they decide what they're going to do in the community to help out and stuff like that. Those people really don't have anything to do with the Illuminati type of Masons, but that is where it came from. You are correct.
Yeah, and so, you know, and to my understanding, the 32, pretty much when you get to become a 32 degree Mason, I mean, that's when you're getting close to, I guess, the hierarchy in which that the Illuminati is what is beyond a 32 degree. I mean, I like to do more research on them because I find the Masons and the Illuminati subject fascinating, and I've got an uncle actually who really, you know, has researched and studied it, and I'd definitely like to do more. But through my incomplete, incomplete knowledge of that, I always thought that once you got into the 32 degree and above of Masonry, that that is when they open up the Illuminati to you, and then, you know, open up the group to those folks.
Well, I don't think just anybody gets that invitation, though. I think you got to have a great deal of money, and you have to belong to that mindset and that political genre, that ilk, because I don't think they just anybody that, like my mother's husband was a 32 degree. I don't believe that they would have ever asked Chuck. He didn't have enough money. He was not of that mindset. He would not have been good material for the Illuminati type of Masons. But there's definitely some there. And, you know, I forget what his name is now, but he was a chaplain for them. And he now has several YouTube videos out that pretty much talks about everything they're doing in there, and they don't seem to bother him. They don't even care that he's saying. In fact, he said that one of their standing rules, or one of their standing, kind of a rule that they live by.
Mandates.
That they let us know what they're going to do ahead of time, either through movies or through advertisements, TV shows. There's just a ton of different ways where they actually tell us what they're about to do. But because it's so far-fetched and people just don't even believe, you know, they watch a movie and they go, oh, wow, that's quite a conspiracy right there. But they never think of it as, yeah, it's really happening. So it's a strange world. Let me just put it that way. And you don't get in that world just by becoming a 32-degree Mason.
So do you think I could be an Illuminati, Cindy?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right up.
But back to my part of my original question is, I thought the Masons and the Illuminati are Christians. Is that true?
I can't say one or the other about the Illuminati being Christians. I know that they have chaplains, and they at least put up a faux type of Christianity that they supposedly worship. Don't know whether they're mostly Catholic. I don't know if they're mostly Protestants. I don't know.
Do you know Kelly?
They can claim to be Christians because that's where you get an awful lot of votes. Jimmy Carter. Did I say Jimmy Farter? Okay, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter claimed to be a born-again Christian. That made him win the election. But a lot of people use all sorts of Christianese because there's an enormous amount of Christians, and that voting block is huge. Masons, in my opinion, by their actions, they are not Christians. If they are Christians, they're chronically deceived Christians. Because one of the most important things of Christ's teachings is this. Look, put your light up on, put a city on a hill cannot be hidden. You don't light a lamp and put it underneath a basket. You bring your light for everybody to see. It's all in the open. That's Christianity. Masonic rituals, a lot of the Masonic things are hidden.
Right.
So if they are Christians, they're chronically deceived Christians. They are not of light. It's a no-brainer for me. So that's my perspective on Masons.
You're exactly
right.
Because
we pagans, we don't have anything like that. We don't have any kind of group or pseudo-group that's trying to take over the world and have a one-world order where we're all worshiping the moon. Well, I don't worship the moon, but
no.
And I was just kind of joking about that. But I'm a druid, not a moon worship. But totally different now. But anyway, we don't have anything like that. We don't have any kind of Muslim jihadists or Illuminati folk, But anyway, I digress. I just think, wait a minute, you have, the Illuminati on one side, you have the Muslim jihadists on the other, but we don't have anybody like that now. I'm just messing with you guys because I like to mess.
Well, you're absolutely right, and there isn't anybody on our side trying to take over the world, and that's because we know that in the Bible, Jesus said that there's not going to be anyone worth, there's not going to be a government, a one-world government worth anything. It's before he comes and sets up his kingdom on the earth. When he comes, it will be a perfect kingdom, and he will be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And you won't need anybody else because he's going to rule perfectly, and there won't be any unfairness or any poverty. There won't be pollution. There won't be, all the things that we trouble ourselves with today. No wars. No sicknesses, because he's the miraculous king, and he can solve any of our problems that we want. So when he comes, we will have a perfect one world order. But we're not going to get that before he comes. We will get a very imperfect one world order when the Antichrist comes to power. That will be termination of a lot of people at that point, and it'll be a horrible, horrible thing.
Right. Well, here's I want to throw this out, and that's why Robert has made me somewhat of a Newt Gingrich fan, because he brought the CNN cameras into Congress. It's like, that's just thinking awesome what Newt did. Okay, so, I go back to the verdict. I talked about this before. It talks about being open, being a light versus, let's hide what we're doing, because if people find out, then they would, throw us in jail. So here's what it says. Okay, I mean, this is the stark comment. It's unbelievable. It's out of John 3. Mm-hmm. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what has been done through God. That's what's the problem with the Masons. They are secretive, 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 congressmen, secretive, backdoor deals, and, you know, go ahead and, well, in order to find out what's in the bill, you'll have to let us pass. Really?
Yeah.
Okay?
Certainly.
So, you know, Newt did an awesome thing by bringing cameras and exposing, bringing to the light what's going on in Congress. You know, it's kind of a revolution. It's kind of subtle, but its long-term effects are amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a, you know, openness, communication. You know, hey, I messed up. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm going to confess it. Will you forgive me? It's just some simple principle of common sense. But do our congressmen have it? You know, earlier, Robert, you were talking about what could our politicians do to better the country? The answer is resign.
Yeah, you're right, Kelly. And there's a lot of people saying that right now. I think there's people that will just vote for anybody to get rid of who's in there now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And it kind of worries me because we could get even worse than what we got in there. If they start dumping everybody out, you're going to hit the good ones with the bad ones. And then what are we going to get in place in that place?
Yeah, selectively get the, you know, selectively get, you know, get them out. They're not all bad, just, you know.
That people don't know.
Well,
people don't bother doing the research to find out who needs to stay in there and continue the work and who needs to be
yeah.
there, booted out of there.
Go ahead, Cal.
The real problem with politicians, it's the 90% that make the 10% look bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, I'm sure once, you know, you got your freshman, you know, congressmen and senators in there, well, you know, that you have, that pressure's already brought to bear, say, look, now that you're here and you got a kind of taste of what it means, you know, what you get for being a politician, if you want to be able to keep doing this, sometimes I think about this, keep doing this, that, you know, you'll play by, you know, what we want you to do. Now, I also wonder, you know, about whether, you know, there are some sometimes I wonder if all politicians, even the ones that we consider good, are in at it, or, you know, are in on it, and that there's certain ones that are picked to say, hey, look, you'll be the voice for this kind of group, like Ted Cruz, you know, who's for kind of the Tea Party. You know, we see him as, you know, or he's seen as, you know, kind of the Tea Party conservative, you know, politician. But I wonder, and I'm not saying this is the case, but just sometimes I wonder if that's his part, and Rand Paul too, you know, is that their part to play? You know what I mean? In the grand scheme, I mean, you know,
I think it would be very difficult. I think it would be very difficult to get every single member of Congress on the program to take down America. I think it would be difficult to do that. I kind of doubt that those people are not sincere. They're pretty consistent in what they're doing and what they're saying and how they're voting. So I would say that those men that we've been talking about, like Justin Amash and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, some of the other, you remember who they were when we were having our big arguments over.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it would be. I agree. It'd be kind of difficult to get everyone like that. Just sometimes I wonder. That's all. I mean, I think that's actually the case. But sometimes when I, you know, just because it seems like, at least lately, and correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't it seem like we always lose?
Well, let me.
You know what I mean? We're heard, you know, but, you know, the Ted Cruz's, the Rand Paul's, the Newt Gingrich's, the Ron Pauls, it don't seem like, you know, we're out there, you know, I mean, I don't want to, there's an analogy I was going to use, but I decided not to, but, you know, we're kind of out there, you know, touting it, and, you know, they're out there as the politicians, so, you know, they get more, press and media than we get right now, but we always seem to lose. I mean.
Well, let me contrast something. you'll remember that something similar to our 2010 election happened back in 1994, I guess it was. And we got that, or was it two? Anyway, we got that whole big changeover in Congress, and Newt Gingrich took the helm because of the, he took the contract with America and fulfilled it. Okay, when those new freshmen came in, they came in with all kinds of energy, and they were all conservatives and high hopes and just couldn't wait to get started. Well, I think that Ted Cruz and some of those other guys came in the same way, just absolutely just couldn't wait to get their hands in there and start changing stuff. And then I'm sure that they visualized somehow a parallel of what went on in the 90s. But the problem is the person at the helm, Newt Gingrich, is the one who got it all done.
Right.
What we're stuck with today, what Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, all those guys are stuck with today, well, Ted's not in the, he's in the Senate, but the guys that are stuck over there in the House today that could be doing so much through the same channels that Newt used, which is the purse, they could be doing the same thing there, but their leader's not Newt Gingrich, it's Boehner. And Boehner is
he's their leader.
He is the worst possible person that we could have there other than maybe Romney. I just don't know what these people are thinking. Well, I know what they're thinking. It's their Illuminati roots. He's one of them. That's why he's there. And so it must be very frustrating for those guys coming in there, those freshmen, and they're like, oh, we had such an opportunity here. And Boehner won't let us do it.
Well, what I find interesting is that Rand Paul, Justin Amash, Ted Cruz, they're crucified by their own people. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so true. That is very true. I mean, personally, sometimes I think they need to just all leave the Republican Party and engage somewhere else, but I think they feel like, well, there's really nowhere else for them to go, you know, at this point.
Well, you end up being like Virgil Goode, who was an excellent candidate, but you
right.
can't get any traction when you're not one of the big two. People are like, well, I'll waste my vote if I vote for him.
I hate that mindset.
Tell me about it.
I mean, how can voting your conscience, which is what I did, you know, and I know a lot of other folks did, you know, is vote your conscience. And to me, I couldn't say that voting my conscience was a waste of my vote, because in the end, I got to live with myself. And I would have felt more like if I wasted my vote by voting for someone I didn't believe in.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's what a wasted vote is. When you hold your nose and you vote for somebody you don't want to vote for, that's wasting your vote.
Well, America should vote their conscience, you know. Vote for those people, R's or D's, that have a less than 10% approval rating. Yes.
Yeah, you're mentioning that earlier. That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Yeah. Go ahead, son.
You've got so many people that have no clue who those people are on the ballot. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but in my state, we had like 14 people on the ballot for president. And
wow.
Those people had no clue who those people were. They had no idea who Virgil Goode was or Johnson or, wait a minute, what was his name, Johnson, the libertarian? What was his name?
Gary Johnson, libertarian. And then you had Virgil Goode, the Constitution Party.
They didn't know who those people were. They listened to the debates, and they saw them get to talk maybe twice during the debate, you know. That's not going to cut it. They don't know what their voting record is. They haven't heard them speak with questions, you know, just real questions from real people and listen to their answers. And they don't.
Well, yeah, they also, you know, if someone like Virgil Goode could have been, you know, heard out on the debates, you know, with the Republicans and the Democrats, would they get shut out?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, their voice can, you know, and give them more media attention, I think their voice could have been heard. I really think that those alternative parties, you know, including, you know, Virgil Good, you know, probably would have got, a lot more of the votes. I mean, look at when, Ross Perot ran. He got, 11% the first time he ran?
I thought he got 20.
Was it 20% of the vote the first time he ran?
I think he got 20%, and that's why lost, because he took, it was Dole. Dole took his votes. I mean, he took 20% of the votes from Dole. Now, that doesn't mean that all 20% of those would have been Republicans. He may have gotten a lot of Democrat votes, too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But assuredly, it was conservative votes that he took.
Well, I'm sure Dole could have won anyway, even if it wasn't for Ross Perot. Why? Because, you know, Dole is a moderate Republican, and moderate Republicans, as history has shown, do not win general elections.
Right. And I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think you can't do the same mistake over and over and over again, year after year after year, election after election after election, and not get the point. You can't keep doing it and not get the point. And yet the rogue still comes on TV and talks about how you can't vote for a conservative. You'll lose the middle vote. You'll lose the moderate vote if you put up a conservative. And he just keeps touting that same lie over and over again, hoping that, you know, you say a lie enough times and you will eventually believe it.
And I thought, you know, back in the Bush era, Roe was considered conservative. What the heck ever happened to that?
Well, please try to remember who Bush was. Bush is a member of the Illuminati, so they did not mind if Bush was portrayed as a conservative. They didn't mind backing him and supporting him and giving the money to him, because he was one of them. Even
are we talking about the younger or the senior?
Well, both, but
no,
the younger only got elected because his daddy got him elected through the CFR. So, but I don't think that George W. was cut from the same cloth as his daddy. I think genuinely loved the United States and wanted to do good for the United States.
Right.
I think he got a load of bad advice from his dad. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
It's just an opinion.
What do you think, Kelly?
Kelly?
Well, there's a ruling elite that keeps getting elected, and it's kind of like weird.
Now, what do you think of her comments about George W. Bush being different than his dad, and a true love for America and wanting to do good for America?
Hey,
Kelly's not so sure.
Well, define good. You know, his definition of good, or whatever it is.
Well, we would consider good for America, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody wants to see, that's where the problem is that people do good. Oh, really? What's your definition of good? Well, Stalin decided that 30 million people dead would be good. You know, Hitler, let's just get rid of the Jews. That would be good. What's your definition of good? You know, Daddy, New World Order, Bush, Patriot, you know, the Patriot Act, oh, that's good for America, yeah. Which led to, you know, spying on Americans, the NDA, strengthen it, you know, we got SOPA attempts. It's like, oh yeah, this would be good. Let's spy on Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Oh, what do we got going on here? It's like, oh, but it's good. Yeah, it's good. What is your definition of good? I mean,
I'm not of the mind that, you know, with the onset, you know, or the beginning of the Patriot Act, I think that the intention was to truly just, was, you know, the intention was to protect the United States. I think when Bush, George W. Bush, you know, got things set up for the Patriot Act, I think the intention was to protect the United States and its citizens from further attacks from, you know, terrorists. I think that's how he, this is what I think. I think that's what George W. Bush wanted the Patriot Act to do. I think that that was his intention.
And we supported it.
Right, we supported it. And I think that the Patriot Act since then has been abused.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's been abused. I think a good intention, you know, maybe an intention that was given too much power, too much scope, was abused by, you know, others, and now, namely Obama, and now something that was supposed to be, just, you know, for the protection of the United States and its citizens is being used against the people instead of for them.
So maybe the problem then lies really with the Congress. If we take our assumptions of your argument and we run with it further, that Bush was trying to protect America, but Congress, a whole bunch of them, 535, said, yeah, this is good to implement the Patriot Act, which parts of it were shut down in Mayfield versus U.S. In fact, this is so bad, parts of the Patriot Act. Did they ever tell you about Mayfield versus U.S.?
No, I don't think so. If you did, it's been a long time
ago. Well, parts of the Patriot Act were shut down by a court up in Portland. A guy named Mayfield, somehow the fingerprint computer software confused him with a terrorist. And so the Justice Department was going into his office in his home, whenever they felt like it, and gathered all sorts of evidence. No judicial warrant. They just kind of, we're going to do this. Fingerprint machine says, oh, yeah, it's him. So he was arrested, and he's like, what? I got a bazillion allies. I'm not involved in any terrorists whatsoever. And so he sued, and of course, he got his criminal charges immediately dismissed, but after that, he reached a settlement that they would pay him $2 million with the right to appeal, and he went to an appellate judge, and the judge was talking about, okay, the discussion on the table here is our right to be secure, Fourth Amendment, your right to privacy, da-da-da-da-da, all sorts of rights, and someone from the Justice Department, this is under Bush, said, well, you know, we need this to find terrorists. And the judge says, look, if you're going to throw out the Fourth Amendment to the Patriot Act, you might as well throw out all the rest of the amendments, okay? Request denied by the Department of Justice. We're ruling in favor of Mayfield's arguments. And so parts of the Patriot Act were struck down. You do have to have a judicial warrant in the Ninth District, which is mine. And so that was a huge victory. And so what a judge had to do was undo what Congress and the president wanted to do. Like, you know, go into your house, your office, whatever, your phones, grab whatever information they want to use it, what, against you for whatever reason, because they felt threatened. I mean, this is getting pretty spooky, but he won. He prevailed, and parts of the Patriot Act are shut down. So, well, at least in the Ninth District. I mean, but when you get in a situation where fortunate would have it, an attorney goes through all this hassle, and he defends the Constitution, and a judge has to tell Congress, you're out of line? We got chronic problems here. And this happened many years ago, and that was from the Patriot Act.
You know, it's only going to get worse, too, with as much power as they have, as the federal judges age out, retire out, they're going to replace them with their own judges, and then pretty soon we'll have no recourse whatsoever in the courts. I just see in the future that there won't be very many opportunities for a guy like that to defend himself. And let me tell you something. I'm sure that a lot of people celebrated when they heard about Alawahi getting blasted out by the drone over there, okay? And it's really difficult to hate the law when your enemy just got the worst end of the law, okay? But you really have to look at it, okay, what if in the next 20 years it's Christians that are going to get annihilated by a drone, because they're considered, according to Obama, what was the word he gave us? What was the word for faith, Tea Party people and Christians, fundamentalist Christians were called?
Are we domestic terrorists?
Oh, yes. We're possible domestic terrorists.
Well, the research I came across, Cindy, was the lexicon of, I think it was it 2007? The lexicon by the Department of Justice said, well, you know, if you're listening to Robert Cho, you're considered a terrorist, i.e. alternative media. I was like, are you serious? You're going to call me a terrorist because your definition of listening is this unbelievable, okay? I mean, this is pre-Nazi Germany, beep, beep, swear. Okay, so anyway, and the question is, how do we wake up and empower the American people that we got to get different representatives in office, we got to get more representatives in office? The wave is coming. The powers that be are scary. Okay? I mean, Alex Jones is doing awesome. He had like a million people listening to him on his live feed at JFK when he was basically blocked from entering. He was assaulted. It's unbelievable what's going on in our country. And yet at the same time, we have something different from Nazi Germany. A massive amount of people are waking up quickly. And so the question is, what's going to happen?
We need massive amounts. If massive amounts don't wake up, it's all over, because, you know, 1,000 of us sitting here on the blog talk show, or even 10,000 of us, isn't going to cut it. It's going to take about 25 million people to wake up, and then we might be able to make a difference at the polls. If we can get a fair election,
right?
We got to be given true the vote. As much of our time and money and help as we can give them.
Yeah, you've got you know some folks from True Vote, do you not, Kelly?
Well, I've been in touch with them a little bit. They have made some good changes in Texas, but they are, they're the ones that were working hard on ID. And, of course, that was a big fight. It came back to our discussion about darkness and light. Let's see, light would be, oh, that's right, show your ID to vote. Darkness would be, vote five times, we don't care. You know, we're not going to tell anybody.
To show our ID here in Ohio. I know the last election we had here, I had to show my ID. And I thanked them for asking for it.
Yeah.
You too. But, you know, even more important than that, Kelly, is clearing the rolls. We've got felons. We've got dead people. We've got
dogs.
Illegal people. We've got dogs.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how full of illegal voters we have on our rolls right now. People that have moved out of the state, they'll vote in their previous state by mail-in ballot, and then they'll vote in the state where they're at now. And that's just ludicrous. And we've got to stop that. We've got to get a program that separates. You've got to have a way to get the dead weight off your voter rolls. We in the Republican Party here in this county went around neighborhoods. We walked neighborhoods. and we called and called and called, and you cannot believe the addresses and mostly phone numbers, the phone numbers that we have that are completely wrong. And these, and people are registered to vote under those phone numbers and those addresses, and they're not there. Now, why are they allowed to be on the voter roll? Why are these things not cleaned off? It's because they can use those votes. They can use them to cheat with. That's why.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, well, here's the good news. I have enough time. I'm still working on it, but a simple strategy, okay, we got electronic election machines. That's the worst problem.
Mm.
The Help America Vote Act was a joke. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's a lot of hard work you do, and we'll give you these electronic machines. It'll make your workload a lot easier, really, and then you can electronically flip it. The county election clerk doesn't even know it. My county election clerk, I talked with her about it. She started to have this paradigm shift in her face that, oh, my gosh, I work so hard for integrity and it ain't working. But we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready with download the grand jury complaint, get it to the grand jury. They walk into the election clerk's office the day after the election. They start counting ballots. It's like, whoa, really? Our physical ballots say this, and your electronics says that. When you start getting rid of these machines, you know, several countries in Europe said, we're done with this. This is stupid. It can be manipulated. Why is America not on this? Oh, that's right, because there's people that are very powerful and have convinced the Supreme Court that, well, you know, we can't look at the computer code because it's copyright protected. It's intellectual property. It's patented. So we cannot allow analyze the thousands of lines of code because it's copyright protected. Really? You know, these arguments are just a joke. They're a scam.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody did an analysis of South Carolina. Yes, Newt Gingrich, he was number one. Number two really was Ron Paul, but they actually flipped that Romney got second. I mean, it's endless. But so we're going to be ready, and we're going to expose it, and we're going to see some really good things. It's
what
just
state
take
was that again?
Time.
What state was that?
South
again?
Carolina.
Oh yeah. Okay. Is that where you're from, Kelly?
No, I'm originally from Iowa, but I'm out in California now.
Oh. Okay.
So.
Yeah, you said you're in the 9th district, and I thought that was California, but then a little while ago I thought you said you were from somewhere over in the east, so I'm
well,
all mixed
I
up.
Lived in Maryland, actually, for a few years, but anyway, over here.
Well, it's late and I'm tired. So.
Yeah, and tomorrow is Turkey Day, or actually today is now, isn't it? So what do you folks have going on for Turkey Day, for the Day of Giving Thanks?
Well, we've got a house full of family here, and we're going to have tons of people eating tons of turkey and ham and berry mallow.
Oh, good. And each one of those people, you can email the link to tonight's show and say, listen to me on the radio. And so they can go
right.
And listen to Bard's Logic. So gave every one of them the link. And you do the same, Kelly.
My people aren't even on the
internet.
Not even, it's so frustrating.
You got a lot of lefties on your family?
My dad and mom are not even on the internet at all. My uncle and aunt and their kids are all Democrats. And
good boy.
They're the type that are still supporting Obama Democrats, okay?
Oh, Jesus.
Then we have some that won't even discuss politics because they think it's just, it causes too much animosity.
Mm.
So this is the conglomeration that I have to work with. And then others are just plain lazy. And then Others are just too busy. They're just busy. They have hours and hours of work and school and all of that, and there's no time for keeping up with what's going on in the political world. And see, that's what we're fighting right now. That's our fight. To get people to, you know, take a little time from their busy schedule and figure out what's going on. What are you doing, Kelly?
I'm going to do some mad scientist stuff. I'm so like, how do we get this mad scientist thing finished, tested? So, pick up some friends.
You'll let us know how that works out, Kelly.
A couple friends of mine are basically, they're on the edge of being homeless, so I'm going to take them to a turkey feed at a local grange, and I told them, well, you guys, we're going to have to do dishes if we want to get a meal. And they're like, oh, I'm okay. So.
Well, y'all have fun, and that was nice of you to do that.
Definitely.
Well, all I can provide is transportation. I know these guys will work hard and do dishes, and we'll get a meal that way, but that's about it. At least, you know, some really neat people. I mean, they're...
Mm-hmm.
One of them's got some chronic sickness. The other guy, he's just got, well, we're in a county that's terribly economically depressed. And,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're going to figure it out.
What are you doing, Robert?
Well, I'm going to go over my wife's sister. It's about an hour from us, so it's over the river and through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of grandmother's house, we're going to aunt's house.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year I have Laura. I have my daughter. Because I switched off with her mom 1 year, her mom has her for Thanksgiving, and the other year I have her. So this gets to be my year to have her. So I'm going to we're just going to get do that, and I plan on watching some football and. And I might do a little bit of work, but do that, and maybe have a few Jamesons on ice, So, we'll have a few of those tomorrow, and I shall be up late into the evening tonight playing video games, since I'm off tomorrow.
Oh.
I'll be up till 4:30, 5:30 in the morning, probably playing video games.
You and your video games. How can you stay awake? You can't possibly be that good at it when you're in the middle of a sleeping stupor. I mean,
oh, I'm not. It's all good. No, what? It's actually a role playing game. It's you know, sword fighting and magic and stuff like that. So it's not. It doesn't need a lot of eye hand coordination to do. Because, you know, you basically put it on pause, you pick what spells or weapons you're going to use and kill monsters and stuff like that. And then it's kind of a brainy game, too. And then, and plus, there's coffee. As soon as I get off the show, close up the show, I'll be making myself a nice, hot, steamy cup of coffee at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, Robert. No, not me. I'm headed for bed.
No, not me.
Get up, cook in the morning.
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Yeah.
That's
well,
my mind. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
You might get there a little sooner, you know.
You know, that's what a few people tell me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a few people tell me. They're like, you know, Rob, you need to sleep more. And eating much. I guess it's... See, now I can't, my wife can't get on me for not eating tomorrow because it's turkey day. So I'll at least have the big meal, maybe a little breakfast. But she's always getting on. I know we're digressing here, folks, on Bard's Logic tonight, or at least this part, and I'm digressing in Bard's Logic. But, let me tell you, folks, she is constantly on me about eating. I mean, I'll come home from work, she'll be like, what'd you eat today? And then Then there's that silence. I'm like, well, I had a breakfast cookie. Yeah, what else? And then I don't have another answer for her because that's probably the only thing I did eat that day. And so she just roll her eyes and harangue me for a while. And
Well,
somehow
Robert,
I need to eat more. So.
She's trying to do you good. That's her job.
Oh, I know. She's a great wife. She really is. Well, you got the opportunity to meet her. She's good people.
She's a sweetie.
Yep. I tell you what, she's my rock. Let me tell you, she's great. And I am a true believer of, you know, behind every great man's a great woman. So hopefully, maybe if I'm great one day, you know, she'll be the reason for that. But I had to be divorced first, you know, in order to get to the second, so that happened. But
a lot of people have to go through that.
Yep.
It's because we make our decisions too young.
Yeah. it's all good, and then of course it's Christmas shopping to start thinking about. Who said start thinking about? I'm already been thinking about it. Think about what to do. But oh my gosh, folks! I see that it's actually 13 minutes before the before we could shut things out. So maybe we should get back on topic for a few minutes and then do some closing comments on tonight's topic that we've steered away from a little bit, but that's okay. What talk show doesn't, right?
Right.
So we'll go from there. So what about you, Kelly? What do you got to add in for us tonight for the good of the cause?
Well, let's see. Foreign policy is a very complicated, delicate issue. Obama went in with a lot of insensitivities, a little bit of a Marxist/Muslim. The M&M approach. And what else? Congress isn't listening to us. What else? I don't know. I got to, like, crack jokes to keep my own insanity here. Or insanity? Mm-hmm. Did I say insanity? You know, I have to crack jokes to keep my sanity. Okay. And let's see, Mark Twain, he said, what did you say? Politicians, lawyers, and prostitutes, but I repeat myself.
Can you say that again? That was great.
Said politicians, lawyers, and prostitutes. Oh, but I repeat myself.
That's great.
So, anyway, yeah, that's about all I have to say right now. I'm just like, I don't know what to say anymore. I got a buddy who sees beans and bullets. He invited me to his bunker if the whole world falls apart. So, you know.
Oh, I want to come.
There we go. We're all going to hang out with Kelly.
Well, you know, I said this before to other patriots. Come to Siskiyou County. At least visit when the excrement hits a rotating auscultatory device. and not only the whole county will be a bunker, okay? Because we got a sheriff that will, like, arrest the feds, keep them out, and so we're going to be pretty safe. So, anyways.
And Kelly, we're going to have to find a way to get us in the middle of the country so you and I get the opportunity to meet face-to-face. I finally got the opportunity to meet Cindy earlier in the month, which was a great pleasure. Was finally able to do that, and so I'm looking forward to hopefully, I don't know if I'll be able to make it all the way out to California, but maybe we could find a place that's in between there and here sometime, maybe this summer or something. I think that would be great.
We need to all move to Texas and get them to secede.
There you go. Well, I'm not going to ask you to come to California. I would invite you to the state of Jefferson.
Oh, there you go. How is that going, by the way?
Tehama County is going to vote on it probably in the next few months. We already got two counties that basically said, yeah, let's do it. Modoc and Siskiyou were larger than the state of Massachusetts. So,
is that really a possibility, Kelly?
Theoretically, yes.
Does the California Constitution allow for that?
The federal Constitution allows it if the state legislature says yes, and then the Congress says yes, then we are our own state.
Well, good luck, buddy.
Wow, that'd be fascinating. Oh yeah, certainly is. That would be fascinating. It really will. Just I'm hearing that Puerto Rico might end up being actually the next place that becomes a state, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I always thought that was fascinating.
Obama can't wait to get Puerto Rico in here.
Yeah. Well, I think he already thinks it is since we have 57 states.
Yeah.
It'll be a
58.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell you what, Kelly, you have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow. And hope all that goes well for you and keep us posted. And it's always great having you here on the show. Very glad that you called in tonight. Appreciate it. So you want to give a little promo maybe for your website? You don't want anything new with your website? And then after that we'll turn it over to Cindy, and then I'll close things up.
No, let's just go ahead and turn it over to Cindy.
Okay. Cindy?
Well, the question for tonight was, did Obama surrender to Iran? And I like what Newt said. This is surrender to, it's very simple. Very plain, this is surrender to the Iranians. It's an exact parallel to what happened with North Korea when the State Department team was duped, patted themselves on the back all the way to the Koreans' nuclear explosion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said on your article that you put in the thing there. And he's pegged it, and there's really not much more to say about it. And either... The only thing to be discussed is why did he do it? Okay, he's either one of the Muslims. He's looking for the world to be under Muslim rule, or he's one of the CFR Illuminatis, and he wants to be. He may be working both ends. Who knows? They're using each other. Who knows who's going to end up on top? Maybe the top dogs in the Middle East countries aren't really Muslim at all. Maybe they're Illuminati.
Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be a discovery?
It's a mess. It's a mess. People better wake up and start taking care of their situation. They're just allowing someone to rule them, to take their freedoms away. And subjugate them under whatever they feel like subjugating them under, or under to. But anyway, that's all I had to say. Thank you for letting me come on and say it.
Oh my gosh! No, anytime. It's great to have you come on. And Cindy and Kelly, you guys are both. I'm gonna say this. I'm very thankful. Talk about things we're thankful for. I'm very thankful for you too. For all the time you've spent on the show, for all that you two do for America. I think you're both great patriots. I was saying earlier, but, behind every great man is a great woman, at least that's in my case. I'm not saying I'm great. I'm just saying if I ever will be, she'll be, because that's the support system. At least that's for me. I know that's not for everybody. You guys are some great folks, great patrons of what you're doing for, and all the hard work you, Cindy, and you, Kelly, are doing for America and for the citizens of this great country, that we should all be thankful of being fortunate enough to be born in. And I'm thankful for you folks, the audience, for your continued listenership and your continued working for America, too. But, of course, I still will, and tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And, of course, if you're new, I will tell you that you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com And please check us out on the web by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, as well as if you're a Facebook user, check us out on Facebook as well. So take care, all. Have a very happy Thanksgiving and a great start to the Christmas season. And take care. Good night. And we will see you next time on Bard's Logic Political Talk. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.